Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the mountain shit. Let's go hook him up!
Another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ant, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Another beautiful day in Washington State. Love and life.
Cool. Well, it's nice to know that you could join us this week.
Yes. I thought it funny, you know, you said might not be able to join you because I might have cell service. But how would I contact you and tell you that I don't have cell service if, in fact, I don't have cell service? Picking up what I'm laying down.
You could have figured out a way. You're a smart guy. But we also have our other co-host on the line, a co-host who can't answer the phone or return a text when it could have been important.
I was outside doing some work and just walked in about 30 seconds before the show went on the air. I'm sorry.
Well, you're
not a priority in my life. I'm sorry. I wish it were different.
I truly
wish I could make you a priority in my life, but I can't. Not my fault.
You need to.
Yeah. If this was a paid gig, I'd be all over it. I wouldn't miss a show.
Well, tell Brian to put us on the show, and then we would get
paid. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
You know, he can have five lines. He could actually produce our show. You know, and record it for us, you know. So next time you see his little ass, you could push that.
See, Brian likes to make money without doing anything. Yeah, that's why I was in charge of the one run of T-shirts. Yeah. He had nothing to do with it. He couldn't even plug it, for crying out loud.
We'll probably get on the main site, and then we'll get all these wrestling fans yelling at us, and we'll run off like Claire Lynch did. And she got run out of the wrestling business because all the fans were on her YouTube page and her website telling her how much she sucked.
Well, sometimes the truth hurts.
Well, I think Craig would get run off first, and then slowly we would probably get run off.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. This is a ruse. This is a gimmick. I'm trying to get run off and thrown off the show.
Before we get to our main topic, which is going to be the... Is it a DVD or what is it? I mean...
Yeah, it's a DVD they've come out with, like the 50 top finishers of all the time, and they got the countdown list, and yeah, it's a DVD they're coming out with.
Oh, okay. I think it could be interesting. There's a lot of guys on there that are, you know, that aren't normally on a lot of their normal DVDs. So I guess it'd be an okay DVD. I didn't know if it was an article or a DVD or what when you first brought it up. But anyway, we're going to do the
WWE. Well, this is one where we can let WWE do the work for us, and we can just take their list so we don't have to do anything. So,
yeah. But before we get to the list, sir, it has been – It has been a very newsworthy week. Not really in the wrestling circles, but as far as the UFC circles.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to start ranting or raving or anything, but all I can say is karma's a bitch, isn't it, Dana White?
He's not answering.
You know, I feel bad for all the fighters. I feel bad for all the people who paid to go to Vegas, who are going to Vegas and aren't seeing the show and everything. But as far as Dana White and the people in charge who couldn't bother to answer none of our emails when we expressed our displeasure at the overpricing of our show in July, and their attitude was either go get a full refund or fuck off. That's basically what Dana told Dave. So when I saw all the trouble that they were having, I laughed my ass off at everything. And, yeah, like I say, karma caught up to you, you bald-headed bastard.
I blame Greg Jackson.
I mean, and just like Dana, you know, he did attack Jones. It's not like he didn't say any, you know, he didn't take it easy on Jones, but he put the worst on Jackson, you know what I mean? So he was kind of smart about that. But, I know Contreras only knows the most briefest news bits about this whole situation, but Craig, your opinion on this whole situation?
I have so much to say, but none of it has not been said already. Everybody wants to blame John Jones for not taking the fight, and okay, I understand that, but realistically, come on. You know, he's not prepared for this guy, you know, whatever.
He's not prepared for a guy who hasn't trained at all that one single day, a guy who usually cuts down to 185, who is actually going to have to cut down to make 205,
mm-hmm.
which means he's got to be dieting like a motherfucker this coming week. A guy who he is a better fighter than in almost every way. This was honestly, about like the four top contenders in the light heavyweight division, this would probably be the easiest one, even with a full training camp. So he should have took the fight, dude. He didn't know that they were going to cancel the whole show, but I mean,
yeah.
And if you're going to pass out blame, the percentage to him goes the most. And then, you know, of course, you got some blame for Dana. You got some blame for Jackson. And, you know, I guess you could blame Hendo. It's not his fault he got hurt, but I guess you could throw a little blame Hendo's way. So.
Yeah, there's been many times where they've bumped the semi-main up to the main event, and the show just hasn't been worth it. So, you know what, I'm kind of relieved they didn't do that, because I would have felt obligated to at least watch it, or at least go out of my way to try to see it, you know what I mean? So, if, I don't know. I mean, John Jones fighting Chael Sonnen, I mean, what benefit would it be to Jones to fight Sonnen?
It would have been money, because
okay.
People would do pay to get Chael.
Yeah.
And Chael has been talking a lot of smack about him. He could have got Chael to shut up, and now he's going to have to put up with Chael talking more and more and more and more shit about him. And he could have got an easy fight over with and just waited till the next one. And now he becomes disliked by everybody. And looks like a freaking jackass in the process.
Yeah, it's always good.
Not that he wasn't already looking like a jackass in the process, because, you know, apparently Mr. All About God and how he's this great Christian and this great person, apparently Rashad Evans was right when he told everybody that he's not the person he's portrayed to be, because the more you know about him, the more it's a lot easier to dislike the dude.
By the way, I think Michael Sempervivi summed this up best. I think you should check your Facebook page. And
Mike Sempervivi is an asshole.
I
pulled him off on CBJ's show last night. And I'll be on my Facebook page in a second, so I'll see what he has to say. But anyway, he's just a good crony.
I love that guy.
He's Yeah, I think you're like asshole.
Yeah. Anyway,
I told him how he offended all the black members of the F4W Empire and how Rodney and Alex both want to kick his ass.
So when you say he offended all the black members of the Empire, you're talking, you know, Alex and Rodney and that's probably it.
Oh, well, it's Thunderlips. Don't forget Thunderlips. He listens every week.
Yeah. And Matt says your phone sounds terrible. Again.
It does sound terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me call back in then and have you guys can carry the server for a minute.
Don't pick up, Peter. Just hijack the show.
Actually, I'm still hearing that noise if he's off the phone.
Oh, yeah. It's not me, though, brother.
Yeah.
You hear it now? He's gone, and now the scratching is gone. I'm telling you, me and you, our own show, we'll name it after our voices, Deep South. Right? No?
That's fine.
Okay. Okay, don't answer when he calls back.
I'm not even on the switchboard, so he's going to have to be able to get in. I'm going to have to go change the password and stuff on Blog Talk so I can't get in.
this is a fine show. By the way, do you have a moron of the week, or are we good this week?
I figured the topic was good enough. I didn't even think about it. I was going to bring up the rest of the bands running off Claire Lynch as being the moron of the week.
That show last night.
I think the gut check was you had to have a gut to be in the contest last night. Was that it? That guy was awesome.
I texted Vinny and Brian both, and I said,
"All right, I'm back."
Okay. I mean, I texted both Brian and Vince. I said the gut check is worse than the Divas Battle Royal for Monday, and I stand by that.
By the way, Chad, how do I sound?
Sound bad.
It's about the same.
Like, how bad?
Yeah, it's just scratchy.
I can't hear static on my headset, but we actually got a caller on the line here, so
I wonder who it could be.
Probably some asshole. So let me go ahead and put him on the line. Caller, call from area code 302. Who's this?
You know, it's amazing. You call back in, yet you still sound like
asshole.
Shit. You sorry ass mother. Oh, man. Hang up on him again because it's just crackling. And finally, I can do a show with Craig and with Chris, which is what everybody wants to hear anyway.
Yeah, people want to be bored out of their minds.
Dude,
what do you want? Didn't I give you enough shit last night? Why are you calling in here?
God, I wonder if is your Kotex sitting correctly this evening? I mean, you're still like you got like some irritation down there over the fact that card changed in Vegas. And karma's a bitch. You know what? I bet you if he checks his bank account and puts his W-4 up against yours at the end of the year, Dana won.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, he's got an ulcer after yesterday. So I mean, let him be richer than me. I don't give a fuck.
Hey, it's better than having your hemorrhoids, Ed.
Yeah. Me and my hemorrhoids will sit on your face at WrestleMania next year.
Easy.
Did everybody hear that? Ed wants to sit on my face. What does that say?
Well,
I want to take a shit on you. That's why.
Oh, jeez.
Now, don't try to spin this. Don't try to
Dark
spin
room.
This.
Huh? I didn't know you were Asian, Sam.
That Aiden?
Yeah, because that's what Eddie goes for.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Does he ask him, or is it just all against the will?
No. It's common
knowledge. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he pays him. Yeah, it's all good.
Well.
Hey, everyone pays for sex one way or another.
True. But.
So, anyway, do you have anything to add to our topic, or did you just call in be a little girl.
Do you have a topic? You just went rambling on there for a minute. What is your topic this evening?
We're talking about the top 50 finishers in the history of the WWE.
The top 50 finishers.
Yes. It's a new DVD that's coming out.
That's
seriously.
I wonder if superstar Billy Graham was ever able to pull out any of those, you know, double face locks and triple wrist locks that the Grand Wizard programmed him for. But, I don't know. You know, the big boot and the leg drop was still, of course, going to be the signature thing for WWE. But I don't know. There's been so many of them. And I got to be honest, I'll always be a fan of the Garvin Stomp.
I love the Garvin Stomp.
You were finishing
it. I hated it, but I liked it.
That was horrible. Of course, I never liked Garvin, so there you go. Well, okay.
That's okay. I really don't like Ed, yet I continue to listen to the show anyway. So I will let you guys be off to your show here, because I can tell while I'm still on the line, Ed is going to be cowering in the corner. So you know what? Craig, you have a good night. Claire, you have a good night. Ed, you just go on and be Ed. Good night.
See you, Tom. Did I ever say that I love that guy? Love that guy.
I think he listened to the show. You should appreciate him as a listener, Ed.
That's absolutely. He's one of our tens of listeners.
He's there to go get a handkerchief.
Eddie.
He got run off his own show?
Sorry, I needed myself.
There he is.
What was the last thing I said? Because I actually had a couple funny lines there.
It doesn't matter. This show, 16 minutes in, we're off the rails.
Hey, how come on the Impact last night they weren't trying to get anybody's masks off?
Right?
They were wrestler masks. They were like bandits, like they were trying to rob a train or something.
Yeah, they didn't think for a second, gosh, I wonder who these masked men are. And they pulled the one guy's mask down, but I was like, who's that? And we never got an
answer. Somebody's obviously a fan of Sons of Anarchy or something. That's why this group came about, obviously.
I found a perfect way to sneak into the Impact Zone, though.
Put on a mask.
Yeah, just wait for a bunch of bike riders to show up, and you just kind of file in behind them with a skull mask on. Grab a seat.
I'm gonna be appalled next week if they put that gut check guy in.
Just think about it. You slide in, and you could start beating on like Rob Van Dam. You know what I mean? Just slide in with your leathers and your face mask on and. You know, take a shot at that.
I'd go for Mr. Anderson because he's just worthless anyway. So.
Well, if he tried to fake hit you back, he might really hit you back. I mean, it's 50-50 with Van Damme. With Anderson, you could really lay it in, you know. Anyway. But, yeah, the gut check guy, he was no good.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of messed up with the story they told about, you know, his brother dying or whatever. You know, they can't vote that guy in. If they do, then.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you could tell Taz wanted to say some bad stuff on the commentary. And,
yeah.
You know, he could tell he had something on his mind because this guy was just.
All right. I am back again. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck is going on here.
Oh, we didn't even know you were gone. Yeah, that guy sucked. If you looked up sucking in the dictionary, there would be a picture of him in there tonight.
The gut check guy on Impact last night. Did you see that, Ed?
No, I didn't see Impact. But this is the dude that supposedly everyone was looking forward to it last week because of his story or some bullshit.
Yeah, his brother got murdered or something like that. So he became a wrestler, and he didn't become a very good one so far.
No,
what I've seen.
He's still trying to be a good wrestler.
John Cena's punches look better compared to his.
Yes.
Are his punches better than Rob Van Dam?
Absolutely.
Because Rob Van Dam has some shitty-ass fucking punches.
Rob Van Dam has his forearms or something. I just everybody can't throw a punch through forearms or something like that.
Remember Sid used to have a horrible punch, too?
Who did?
Sid.
Sid? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, his punches last night kind of reminded me of Sid. Plus, I think he thought that if you had a, you were to get in the gut check, you had to have a gut. So that's why he got he got picked. But I don't know.
Well,
I hope Alice knows mean to him next week.
I'm signing up for next week because that's the criteria.
But anyway, you want to start?
Yeah, we can go ahead and start on the list here. We're going to have to make a big exception here because one move in particular is totally in the wrong spot, so we're going to skip that and make that be the last one.
Okay. But
a bet involves somebody dead and somebody that's dead in their hand and they and they've got 1 foot.
You give me not too much information. You need a case, baby.
You give it up that much. And it's 1 foot, it's not two, so it's not Kamala.
Let's just say if this man was still alive and he offered himself sexually to Ed, Ed would agree and say, all right, let's go.
You're thinking of Matt Clary.
No.
And you notice you didn't jump to defend him because you're like, you know what, he's right.
Well, that's a good friend, but come on now.
Rick, do you have your list in front of you that I sent you?
I have my list in front of me because I am professional. I'm ready to go.
Well
Craig's a better talker. That's why I was going to let him say the moves and stuff. Intro.
They actually kind of made a mistake on number 50 because they actually have the name of the actual move and not what it was actually called.
Well, it's a PG. They can't say hell.
Hmm. Mine is coming up ever so slowly because my Wi-Fi has been overused today.
See, I'm professional. So let me go ahead and start. Number 50 of the top 50 countdown of WWE top finishers. Number 50 is from JBL, and it is the clothesline from hell.
That seems kind of low to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it should be up there.
He probably has the best clothesline I've ever seen. I mean, you know.
I still love those clotheslines. Those clotheslines Rick Steiner used to throw all the time.
Oof.
Those Sleeping Steiner lines and stuff like that, I always thought he had the best clothesline.
Well, those are good, but JBL, I mean, if he's got the right guy, the guy's going to, like, if he would do it to Goldust or a few guys like that, they'd actually do, like, a whole 360 flip bump off of it.
Yeah.
Because he was so tall and him so high. I mean, to me, the only guys I could think about maybe that are even close to his would be, of course, probably Stan Hansen. He had a pretty good one, but, of course, he was stiffing people on it because he was blind. I always liked Jake the Snake's little short arm.
Yeah, that was good, too.
And but as far as, like, power, just taking your freaking head off, no one made it look as good as JBL.
I like the Russian Snake also.
Well, that's true.
When he was jacked up.
What's the difference between the clothesline from hell and a lariat? Seriously.
Texas? I don't know. I think lariat's just Texas.
So JBL should be a lariat.
Yeah.
Where's Sam? Sam, call back in.
Oh, gosh.
Get a 30-minute diatribe on a clothesline. I told you guys I love that dude. Anyway, that's number 49. We have Mr. Big Van Vader checking in with the Vader bomb that I blatantly stole from him in my short career.
Hey, is this the power bomb or the splash in the corner?
I would imagine. Wait a minute. Isn't the Vader bomb
the Vader
bomb
to me has always been? It's always been the where he gets them in the corner and he comes off like the second rope.
Yeah, that's what I always thought the Vader bomb was. Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be another power bomb. Like, I'm sure they probably got bids in here somewhere, so that's probably why they picked the Vader bomb.
I like when he hit Gorilla Monsoon with the Vader bomb that one time. That was awesome.
He could do some damage because, I mean, he had, like, you know, a lot of the big guys, they're big all the way around. You know, they're, like, round. But he was, he had more of that old-fashioned, just beer gut belly. You know, he went further forward than he did sideways.
Yes. That's why he's off balance all the time and falling down. getting out of the ring.
It's like on the Raw 2000 or whatever it was, he just kind of started walking down the ramp and his gut just made him go into a sprint.
Yeah, one of my favorite moves. Actually, one of my favorite wrestlers, for that matter. Number 48, we've got Dusty Rhodes and his bionic elbow.
Yeah, I love the bionic elbow.
When I was a kid, you know, when I thought it was a shoot, I swore that elbow pad was loaded. It has to be loaded. How he hitting so many men with that? He busted open J.J. Dillon just with that one elbow. Come on, you've got to have something in that pad.
He just, what was awesome is, you know, it was part of his, like, you know, dancing, like, gimmicks where he kind of dance and show off, and then he'd do all the hand jiving and hand
motions. Flip,
flop,
and flop.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was Dusty at his best when he was throwing bionic elbows, because he was, you know, just juking and jiving and just fucking being awesome. I mean, it's probably
the
devastating looking of finisher probably on this whole list, but, you know what I mean? It was awesome looking, though.
No, there's some worse finishers.
He changed to the Weaver Lock.
He took the name of a fucking wife beater. Can't believe that.
Next up, and I don't know how to feel about this one. The Million Dollar Man's Million Dollar Dream.
Well, no, I guarantee you this move's been here twice.
Yeah. I remember the Cobra Clutch more than I do the Million Dollar Dream.
Yeah, the Sergeant Slaughter's Cobra Clutch, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, basically, so, just because of the name, but it's basically the same thing. But it was always a cool-looking submission, the way you had the arms wrapped around. I mean, I'm surprised
True.
No one breaks it out in the UFC and put somebody to sleep with the Million Dollar Dream or the Cobra Clutch.
Next up, I'm just going to hang up after this so Ed can, you know, get on his soapbox. Number 46.
We're going to go to 45. We're going to 45. Do 45.
46 on the list.
45.
Not in Ed's mind. But on the list here, the official list, but not in Ed's mind, 46 is Kerry Von Erich's Iron Claw. Ed, you have the floor.
45, because we're not talking about this move until later.
I can't talk about how stupid it is now?
No, you cannot, asshole.
Let's give in to Ed, and we'll go to number 45, Craig.
Okay, number 45.
Or else we'll be here for a while if we don't.
The man that had the intestinal fortitude to put his own face on his own backside, Ravishing Rick Rude and the Rude Awakening.
He didn't just put his own face. He put everyone's face on his backside and
True.
His front side.
True. Gerald Roberts, and then Jake came and ripped his pants off.
That's right.
He used to have, like, all of, like, when he was in WCW, he used to have everybody on there. He had some of the best tights, I mean.
Yeah.
I remember there's so many
hurt numbers,
man.
Awesome.
He had he was wrestling Junkyard Dogs, so he had Junkyard Dog tights on. I bet those would be worth some money if I guess his wife or somebody decided to sell all that stuff.
But honestly, to me, I never liked the Rude Awakening. I mean, it's a cool name, but it's just a fucking neck breaker.
Yep.
Like,
I thought it looked
fuck?
Cool the way he did it. It looked like it snapped his neck.
Yeah, but it looked like it was a finisher to me.
Yeah, but without that hip swivel, the Rude Awakening is nothing. If you just do a regular old net breaker, that's fine. But when you swivel the hips and then you do it, then it's the Rude Awakening. Just saying.
The way he snapped it off, it always looked like he killed the guy.
Yeah. Speaking of killing people, Lex Luger and the Torture Rack is number 44.
Yeah.
Not that Lex Luger ever killed anybody, but
until
you remember, well, there is that, but too soon, Ed. Jeez. because I'm sure that Nikita Koloff is not on here. He used to do a variation of this, correct?
I don't think so. You may be thinking of Hercules.
Hercules. No, it was Luger, right, that was dropping guys on their heads when he would get done with it, the jobber guys?
I don't remember if he dropped them on their heads or not.
Which guy am I thinking of? That all the guys, when they were doing you know, quick jobs, this guy would put them in the rack, and then instead of dropping them back onto their feet, they would drop them on their heads going the other way.
Somebody beat the dog.
Attacked my dog.
It wasn't your
dog. I gotta run outside, so I'm gonna put the phone down so you guys discuss the next one.
Remember, he's the professional one.
Okay,
I wish I could remember.
Six, we had Kerry Von Erich's Iron Claw. This was a very shitty move.
Yeah, worst move.
I don't think he'd ever beat anybody.
No. I mean, it's Kerry Von Erich.
Well, I always thought the claw was stupid unless you're like Elegante or somebody.
Right.
You know, with the big ass hand.
Let's be honest, one of the most overrated wrestling families in the world.
Maybe what that thing is more famous because everybody's dead. That's a terrible thing to say.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, as we were saying,
Torture Rack.
Number 43.
Lex Luger's Torture Rack is just...
I thought it was lame unless it was like the giant, so it looked impressive.
Yeah, exactly. If it was somebody big, it looked like it was some big fat jobbers or like someone like the giant, it looked impressive, but I need to do it to a normal guy. I don't know.
When he beat Hulk Hogan with it, I mean, he beat a lot of guys with it. He beat Hulk Hogan for the title with it, but, I mean, it just didn't look like something that was, you know, that big of a deal, you know?
Number 43, the Dudley Boys and their 3D. I thought this was a very cool move back in the day.
It's real cool because they can hit it out of nowhere. It's not like they have to set it up like the Road Warriors. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's always something where they could. They were always building to it, but it was something that they could hit out of nowhere. So that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah,
that started when like the Diamond Cutter, the Ace Crusher was coming like the hot finishers. So.
Yes. It's funny if you're watching ROH nowadays. There's an Ace Crusher, you know, fourth move in. A lot of times now, and everybody uses some form of it. But, this is a cool move. I mean, especially through the table, just throw the guy up. And it's a real easy move to take. It's a really easy move to do. It's a great double-team finisher. Number 42, God rest his soul, Bam Bam Bigelow with the top rope moonsault.
I think this is just thrown in because, honestly, I really don't remember him winning matches with the Moonsault. Maybe rarely against the Jobber or something.
Times. I mean, not that many times. I would have put Moonsault on here. I don't see it.
True.
Yeah. Well, I think they just threw him in because, you know, Bam Bam Bigelow, it's an interesting name. It's a fun name. It's people remember him. So, to me, that's more like a gold watch kind of a thing. Because he didn't even have... You know, he didn't even have good form on his moonsault. He did a more of a half salt, like kind of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Still, one of my favorites growing up. Just love that guy. Just a great wrestler. And before he passed away, he even saved some kids from a burning field. Does that remember?
Yeah. I remember.
It did. Cool. Number 41, we have DDP and the Diamond Cutter. Ace Crusher, one of my favorite moves. You know,
this was the move that I think went a long way in getting him over. Kind of like DDT with Jake Roberts.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it really helped him get over, and it's actually, he got like, basically, I mean, if you really look at it, it's pretty much like a Stone Cold Stunner or an RKO. But he just, like, Austin, you know, the center looks awesome, but, you know, DDP could hit the Diamond Cutter, like, from a little more, like, from more places and, you know, could, you know, do a jumping one and get some height in it. And
and stuff. And I always liked it, but to me it was always, at the time, I guess especially during the Monday Night Wars, to me it was just a ripoff of the Stunner. But, I mean, it was a pretty good move. I mean, it's one of those moves that does get the crowd going.
Yeah, and one of those that you can, there's so many variations and spots you can hit guys with, you know?
Yeah, you can drop it from out of nowhere, plug it in anywhere, it works. Good finisher. we're not going to see Randy Orton's RKO down here, are we?
Yes.
Pretty sure. We're going to see a lot of moves a couple times.
One of my favorites, just because it's so absurd, number 40, Mankind and the Mandible Claw, a.k.a. Sako.
Do you remember when you would, like, when he first started, you would pull boogers out of his nose and fuck it, then do them on the full claw?
Oh, jeez. No, I don't remember that.
I remember.
That was disgusting.
It is a pretty absurd. It was kind of, it was weird, but it did get him, I mean, it did get over. And then when he got Mr. Sako, that really put it over the top.
Oh, yeah.
But basically he had, like, something over his middle finger and not his index finger, but the one next to the pinky finger, and he would basically shove those into his opponent's mouth and cause paralyzation. And
that finger you're talking about is called the ring finger, by the way.
Is what?
Never mind.
The ring finger. Ring finger.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
When Mankind first came in from ECW, they put him under the hood and he acted all wacky and strange, and he would come into one kind of music and then leave with another kind of music. When he first put those fingers down the dude's throat, I was like, okay, this is going to work. They're not watering down a Cactus Jack at all. This is going to be just fine. Little did I know that he would have a sock puppet a couple years later. But,
Who didn't think that the moment that Mr. McMahon said, Mr. Sako, that wasn't going to be the next biggest thing in all of pro wrestling?
Yeah.
Because the first thing I said, there's going to be people with socks on their hands next week.
We don't have a Cobra on this list, do we?
No.
Okay, good. Just check.
It's not going to be that absurd.
I should have been on there instead of Batman Bigelow's moonsault.
Hey, at least your boy won to beat the Cobra last Sunday.
That's right.
Yeah, and he's even though he's a brand new U.S. champion and WWE pay-per-views, he's still humble enough to send people return a text.
Did y'all see the match they had on for NXT last night that they filmed?
Oh, I heard about that. That sounds amazing.
They had Punk and Seth Rollins against Claudio and Chris Hero on NXT.
And I heard it was the dark match, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it's going to be on TV at some point.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it'll come out somehow.
Regal was Regal was petitioning to get it put on YouTube.
Of course he was. It's because he's awesome. Number 39 is a man who has a soft spot in my heart. He's also a man that I saw drink a full case of beer in less than 3 hours. Mr. Honky Tonk Man with the Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
Now, as much as I bitched about Rick Rude's neck breaker, multiply that times 100.
Yeah.
I think this is on the list, so Honky Tonk Man don't say nothing bad about the WWE.
Well, he's going to do it anyway.
You know what I remember about this move? Every time he tried to apply it, he got backdropped.
Right.
Basically, it was the old fashioned neck breaker.
Yeah.
You kind of have the front face lock, and you just kind of like spin sideways.
Yeah.
And he did his little shimmy. He did his little shimmy, kind of like Rick Rude. What?
Absolutely. I was just going to say, without the shimmy, it's just a regular old neck breaker.
It did the shake, the rattle, and never got to the roll.
It's the shake, the rattle, and then the roll. Telling you, it's all in the hips, baby. It's all in the hips.
That's probably got to be the weakest finisher on this whole list as far as the way it looked or whatever. I mean,
there's more to come. Speaking of hips, number 38 is Yokozuna with the Banzai Drop.
Yeah, I mean,
I would be scared to take that move and probably 90% of these other moves, because basically Yokozuna might have had the, I mean, people think Rikishi had a big ass. His ass was small compared to Yokozuna. I mean, Yokozuna had probably the biggest ass and biggest thighs in all of pro wrestling, and basically the whole move was basically him dropping his ass on top of you.
Yeah. It's, when we watched SummerSlam this weekend, I sat next to the lovely Layla Lodge, and she says, that Big Show guy, he's the one that sits on toilets and rips them off the wall, right? And I said, I'm not sure, but I think you're thinking of Yokozuna. And she looked at me and she goes, who? I said, how old are you? And she said, I'm 24. I said, okay. Okay.
She's pretty hot for a chunky chick.
She's very nice, and she's very foul-mouthed. And anyway, she has a thing for big men. Anyway, had a nice conversation with her. Nice lady.
I'm big.
Anyway, well, not like this. As
you know how many?
Point to myself.
Never mind.
Radio. Anyway, yeah, okay. Number 37, Mr. Flash Funk, how did he make this list? With the 450 splash.
I thought that was a good finish.
What did they call it in WCW? Was it the 450?
I think it's the 450.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was,
The death that don't miss. The death that don't miss was the name of the move.
I believe you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Flash Funk was just one of the stupidest characters ever as far as character, but I loved him in WCW when he was just Too Cold Scorpio when he first came out. I mean, he was like...
I loved him in ECW.
I didn't get to see a lot of him in ECW. I'm sure he was just pretty much just like the WCW one.
Yeah.
And, It was awesome. I mean, him and Bagwell were actually an awesome tag team. And
I like him and Bagwell. And he had a match with Chris Jericho at the ECW Arena, and he did a shooting star press.
Yeah.
It was like the greatest shooting star press I've ever seen in my life. He just turned his body inside out. Like you gotta go watch. You gotta go find it on YouTube and watch that match, because it's just weird how he does it. I've never seen anything like that before.
He also did a variation of the 450 where he would actually turn it into a leg drop.
Oh, yeah, the tumbleweed?
Yeah. I mean, this is a big dude.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've read Mick Foley's book, you'd know just how big he is.
Bigger. I mean, he got bigger over the years. Flash Funk was a lot bigger than Too Cold Scorpio. I mean, he can still do the move and everything.
He's talking about his picker.
I know he's talking about his pecker, but I'm saying in general, he did gain some weight when he went to WWF.
I think
he
totally returned to his.
And of course, Crazy wouldn't have had to bring up his giant pecker.
Foley called it his burden.
Somebody called it like a genitalactic. He looked like a genitalactic freak of nature or something like that.
Anyway, you're talking about matches. Go find Too Cold Scorpio against Shane Douglas. One of the better Shane Douglas matches I've ever seen. And Shane Douglas powerbombed Flash Funk onto those not pretty mats that are on ringside, just splat on the concrete. This was a heck of a match.
He also did a move on Scorpio. He was standing outside the ring, and it was a weird-looking move. He picked him up for a suplex and bounced him off the ring ropes and down onto the guardrail, I think.
Yeah. Great match. Go find that.
I think I'm getting drunken Facebook PMs from Mr. Ooh La La.
Well,
what's that?
They're talking about Flash Funk.
He's just kind of being a little weirder than normal.
I think, you know what, I think he just got back from an injury. It's very possible he's, you know, on the computer pilled up.
Well,
anyway.
One of our biggest fans, Mr. Ooh La La.
Big shout out.
Ooh La La.
Number 36, we got Sting with the Scorpion Lock.
Scorpion Death Lock.
It says Scorpion Lock on my notes.
I know that. I'm just correcting everything for the flippy.
That damn PG had to screw everything up. Can't even say death or...
Can't even say death or hell.
He's the first I think I saw Mr. Saito use this move before him, but he's the one that first, like, popularized it here in the United States, I think.
Isn't it basically the same thing that Hitman used, dude?
Yeah, it's a sharpshooter. Same thing.
It's a sharpshooter, yeah. Which basically, it's a Boston Crab, but you cross one leg over, and you're only really pulling back on one leg. And
just looks cooler.
It does look cooler. And Sting didn't put it on as good as Bret Hart.
Well, duh.
But if you can buy it as a finisher as far as the submission, because it's like, how the fuck do you get out of it?
Bret's was so devastating that he didn't have to roll Curt Hennig all the way over for the referee to bail.
That's
something.
<right. laughs> And if Shawn Michaels puts you on it, man,
you're probably getting screwed. Yeah.
Well, probably. Anyway, number 35, we have Lita's Moonsault.
Okay.
They just wanted to get a chick in there, you know, and let's be honest, she did throw a better moonsault than Bam Bam Bigelow.
Very true.
I'm very offended Great Muta didn't make this list.
And by the way, I know I'm a godly man, but when she came on TV a couple weeks ago, her breasts looked fantastic.
She's one of the few that didn't actually take them out once she got off of TV.
Good night.
Bellas took hers out, so now the Bellas are actually a little different.
What? Really?
One of the Bellas took her boobs out.
I'm heartbroken. Somebody needs to keep me abreast of these things. Number 34 has got to be one of the most dangerous moves on the list, but not because
it's not dangerous. It's just dangerous when this asshole does it.
Thank you for finishing my thoughts. Yes, Kevin Nash with the Jackknife Powerbomb.
I thought it looked pretty awesome, just because he's so tall.
Oh, yeah.
That's because
he's really hurting people.
Yeah.
I will never, ever forget the one he gave the Big Show. For a second there, I thought Big Show's neck was broken and he was going to die.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like the year before in a different match, he did it like successfully. Like the first time he did it to him. I think it was in a tag match, a Super Brawl or something, where he picked, it was like one of the most impressive things I've ever seen, and Big Show was like 100 pounds heavier the next year or something like that.
Yeah.
So then they did the whole powerbomb being banned and all that stupid bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about that is when they did that, they did a night show here in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome. I counted 5 power bombs.
Hmm.
All the cruiserweights were doing it.
Yeah. And
are you telling me there
Kevin
wasn't
Nash
logic though at a pro wrestling show?
Well, you know, I figured it was like a major storyline, so I figured nobody would use it, but then, you know, I'm watching freaking everyone, Conan used one. I mean, I was just like, what the hell?
Yeah, this is a dangerous, non-caring man to give a scary move to, let's be honest.
He almost killed Triple H like last year doing one, didn't he?
That sounds about right. 2 years ago. Yeah,
he said last year when they had did the little feud at the end of last year or something, and came in and gave him a powerbomb, landed wrong or something like that.
Yeah, if you can't protect your best friend, I mean, dang.
Number 33, the man with the greatest pile driver, Jerry the King Lawler.
I think he could dispute that.
I'm okay with that.
Not only did I see someone who used a pile driver just as good, I saw him use it on Jerry the King Lawler, and that's Mr. Pile Driver Bruiser Bob Sweetan. You agree with me, right, sir?
I pick Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff.
I know, I have to get on to you.
Actually, no. I think Jerry's the better than Paul Orndorff.
No, Jerry, I like Paul Orndorff better. Paul Orndorff looked like he was really killing the guy, and he was jumping up in the air and stuff. So.
Yeah, when I say better, I mean safer.
Yeah, because perfect. I mean, Wonderful was a little awkward. But yeah, Jerry had an awesome one. I mean, his
pile driver used to use.
You remember when the pile driver was like the most devastating match in all pro move in all the pro wrestling?
Yes.
Yeah.
Until Dino Bravo had to use it as a setup for a fucking side slam.
The powerbomb kind of came like a next generation version of the pile driver, if you think about it.
Yeah, actually, you're totally right about that.
Yeah. Okay, moving along. Number 32.
Didn't you ever find it funny that they had in the rules in Memphis there was no pile drivers, and that was his main move? And he'd always get DQ'd. You couldn't use the pile driver.
Get away with it. I'll never forget that match with him and Bruiser Bob Sweetan that Dave and Jim Cornette say that it's the worst match in history, but once Mr. Pile Driver hit the pile driver on Jerry, that place went absolutely crazy. Those Mexicans went insane. And you can watch it on the Wrestling Go DVD collection. That's what would you say, Couture? It's about a 15-minute match, and there's, what, two bumps?
I think so. It's been a while since I've watched it.
Yeah. Well,
only both of us, Dave and Jim Cornette, were on there doing alternate commentary.
That commentary is so awesome. I mean, I'm surprised that DVD didn't sell more than it actually did. I think it actually did make money, but
I got the Night of the Legends Smoky Mountain Wrestling thing that, and Jim Cornette and Dave did alternate commentary on that too. So
I got that one, and I also got the Before They Were Stars from Smoky Mountain.
And that Smoky Mountain, that Night of the Legends, has the longest video package in recorded history. And it had a 20-minute video package for that fucking main event. Jesus Christ. It was like the length of the 3-hour Raw, seemed like.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
At one point, I had 15 copies each of those because Brian said, just take these home. There's so many of them. Anyway. Let me see. Number 32, we have RVD with the 5-star Frog Splash.
He does have an awesome, awesome Frog Splash, but pales in comparison to Art Bar.
That's true.
Yeah, he looked really like a frog Art Bar did when he did his.
Yeah. But RVD does have an awesome one, and RVD... You always have to give him credit because he always fucking sold. He always felt the 5-star is just not just one of those moves that hurts your opponent. It put him in pain. And didn't they like kind of use that in the storyline last night for once?
Well, I just thought it was goofy. You steal the pin. You steal the pin on a guy that just completed the move successfully, and he didn't go for the guy he just hit the move with.
Every time he hits the thing, he kind of like jumps off the guy, grabs his side like he's in pain, and then has to work his way to cover the guy. So, I mean, I'm surprised that
he lost to
someone to do
work.
That.
Next up, we got number 31, Big Show with his choke slam.
Yeah. I'm going to hit Chris Benoit with this one. It's like the biggest one I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I mean,
awesome.
he's so big that, I mean, it looks devastating no matter who. Even if he does it to a big guy, it looks pretty badass. But
even though nowadays it seems like more of a transition move than anything.
Yeah. I chokeslammed Brian one time, and I heard some smart aleck in the front row goes, well, that was okay, but it wasn't Big Show good.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Really?
Of course, it paled in comparison to the Hurrah Slam. Now, that was a choke slam.
The what slam?
The Hurricane Slam from the Hurricane.
The Hurricane doing the choke slam. That makes no sense.
That was awesome. What are you talking about? He was a superhero. He was super strength.
Especially,
he could do it.
Especially when him and Rosie had their little feud and he tried to choke slam Rosie.
When he was shit, the superhero in training?
Yeah. Don't you remember they broke up and he tried choke slamming Rosie? Stupid. Number 30, we have CM Punk with the GTS. That's one of my favorite finishers right now, actually.
A couple years ago, he nailed, I guess because Rey Mysterio was so, kind of, he was a lot smaller than he thought, and he nailed him with, and like that thing broke his nose or something.
Oops.
He seems kind of, he's like a Rob Van Dam when he throws it. He kind of doesn't seem like he really gives a fuck sometimes.
And he picked a big show up in it, and the pay-per-view might feel like, oh, it's so stupid.
The thing is, he does keep trying to do it to guys he shouldn't do it to. I mean, they should never, ever try and have him do it to Kane again.
Yeah.
No.
You know?
But didn't he hit Kane a while back with it? In a match?
I think he did, but how many? But if you look at overall, it's like 1-7.
Oh, it was in that three-way. It was in that three-way with Daniel Bryan, I think.
At SummerSlam.
Three. No, there was a... I don't know, one of the pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Here, man.
But he fucked it up a bunch of times on Kane.
And sometimes he fucks it up and it, like, hit a knee and, like, it just looks like it hits the chest or something. Look really bad.
That's fine. I don't mind that, actually. I don't mind that because it ain't gonna hurt anybody.
And he doesn't even have the best GTS as it is. I mean, Kenta does it way better except for the fucking... time he fucked it up two times at WrestleMania.
Yeah. And he does it to the back. Kenta does it to the back of the head as well, doesn't he?
Well, that's what he was trying to do when he screwed up, but I think his arm was hurt or something. There was something that caused him to screw it up because he was doing the reverse GTS. That's what he screwed up. He screwed that up twice, and then he went to the regular GTS. But
He had him in, like, torture rack position and then threw him up, but... it just didn't look right.
Davey fucked it up. I blame Davey. He sucks. He's not
sure.
We'll
blame him.
Yeah. But, I can't wait. And Kenta is just one of those dudes who just likes to kick the shit out of you.
Well, yeah. Speaking of kicking the S out of somebody, 29 is Brock Lesnar with the F5.
That's way too low.
Oh, yeah. It needs to be up there. Top 10.
Yeah.
I remember when he killed Albert with this move. Did you remember that?
Remember him killing everybody with the move.
He dropped Albert, like, right on his neck or something. Well, he's just destroyed.
But the thing with Brock is he's just so super strong that he can do the move to guys like, you know, Albert in the Big Show and make it look like he's not even using that much effort. I mean, it's a hell of a move. I really... Yeah, to me, it's also, to me, I would think, not even purposely, but it would be kind of unsafe just because of if you're going at a lot of velocity to the other side of the guy, you know, it's a lot more dangerous than the FU.
Sorry. Well, we'll get to that in a few minutes.
I remember when he murdered, like, Zach Gowan against the ring post with the F5.
Oh,
shoot. That looking brute.
Number 28. And I don't know why he made the list, but we'll just go with it. Number 28 is Bob Backlund and the Chicken Wing.
Okay, you just insulted me and Couture with that right there.
Really?
Why? Because I think it's a shitty move, too.
Oh, you suck. This is, we're talking about former WWE champion Bob Backlund, champion for 5 years.
Yes.
The most boring title reign ever.
No, he wasn't. And the crossface,
had a good match with Brett.
I remember when he put that move on for like 8 minutes on Bret Hart at the Survivor.
That's why I hate it. Had to watch that move for 8 minutes.
That match.
I'll tell you what, though, it really is one of my favorite names for a move. The crossface.
It's a real move.
Chicken wing.
It's a real move.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why.
Cool.
Number 27, we have Batista with the Batista move.
Not enough chicken wing love. I'm very disappointed in you guys.
Number 27 is Batista with the Batista bomb.
Yeah, I always like Batista bomb.
Yep.
The thing though that he the thing was sometimes it would look so awesome, but other times it he'd be kind of sloppy with it at times. So it was kind of you never knew what you were going to get with it. But it basically it's a sit down power bomb.
Yep.
With a big yep. guy because it's more of a move for a cruiserweight to do. You know what I mean? You didn't usually see the big guys doing the sit down part of it, but he did it. And I mean, it looks pretty awesome. But like every once in a while, it looks kind of sloppy to me.
On some spots, it looked like he'd like almost break his leg or something trying to
yeah.
just drop.
Yeah, that's what I meant because he looked awkward. That's what I meant. You know, I mean, he always did it good to the guys, but sometimes he looked awkward when he was going down.
Yeah, I just recently went back and watched him and Taker's match from that WrestleMania. That match was so good.
Yeah, that was a good match. I wish he'd come
love
back.
Love that match. Yeah. Yeah. Number 26.
Once he gets his ass kicked in MMA, he'll come back.
Well, I've got my fingers crossed.
Number 26, we got Mr. Perfect with the Perfect Plex. Awesome move.
Yeah, that was good
basically,
move.
Basically, it's the, what was the original name? The Fisherman Suplex, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's basically it's a suplex where you grab the guy by his leg and knee, and you suplex him, and you keep the bridge into the pin. And he did it awesome. I mean, he was awesome, and he could do it to bigger guys.
He did it a big show one time.
Yeah. That was an awesome move. I mean, it really was. I mean, he made it. I don't think a lot of guys could have made it as cool because it pulled it off as good as him.
Yeah, like when they come off the ropes and, you know, the guy go for a backdrop and he just, like, cinch it in right there real quick and pull it off. And that bridge, that might be cause of some of his back problems later in his career doing that move so much. And
yeah, I'm waiting for Ziggler to steal that one. Just
he needs a better finisher than that goofy zigzag thing. This looks dumb.
Yeah, that's why. Number 25 is Kurt Angle with the ankle lock.
I love this move.
Yes.
It's just a simple, very simple move. And, you know, a lot of reversals and stuff like that. And it's believable. Whenever he scissors his leg, I know it's over.
Yeah.
Moving.
Like the Chris, like the one match with Chris Benoit. Benoit's struggling, and then you keep thinking he's going to get out. And then once he scissors him, it's like, fuck.
That's what he did in the first match he had with Shawn Michaels, and they wrestled for like a half an hour, and then he put the ankle lock on him, and he scissors the leg. I said, it's over with. He's not getting up.
Is that the WrestleMania match?
Yeah, that was the first match they ever had.
Yeah. I remember that, because that looked awesome, and I remember Shawn hit a super kick out of nowhere where he was like right next to him.
Yeah, he was, like, browbeating him and kind of slapping him around. Shawn just kind of threw Kurt's hands up and then just nailed him flush in the face with a super kick.
Yeah, that was
really good,
too. Awesome match. God damn, that was good.
I just like this move because it's just so easy to transition and to pop the crowd. You know, like, you know, he looks like Kurt's done for, and he reaches back and picks the ankle and, you know, the crowd can really get into a series of moves with this one for that finisher. It's a cool one.
Vince McMahon beat Ken Shamrock in the octagon with this move, I remember, on Raw one time. I think he was hitting with a chair or something by Jeff Jarrett, but still.
I remember that the one thing that Kurt did is Kurt sold when he would put it on, he sold it like crazy.
Yeah.
And you could tell he made it look like, I'm about to win this motherfucker, you know. Yeah, he was you know, he really made it better than Shamrock.
Number 24 is Chris Jericho with the Walls of Jericho / the Lion Tamer.
Now, the Lion Tamer is what he did to Dolph the other night. Cause he's like,
oh, yeah.
Broke him in half.
In half.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he made it look pretty good.
Maybe he, like, sticks his knee, like, right in the back of the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Just bends backwards. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, he makes it look good. He really does make it look good.
He's going to be missed for a while. Number 23 is Edge and his spear. I like this move because it's one of those moves you can just hit from out of nowhere or you can set it up. It's just one of those cool moves where, you know, if you're looking for a big comeback, you can hit it as a comeback move and then let the guy get another move in and then hit it again. Just one of those really cool finishers that you can hit on anybody, too. It doesn't have to be a...
And it always pops the crowd when he hits it.
Yeah. It's not one of those where the guy has to be your same height and weight. You can just, you can hit it on the Big Show or whoever, you know what I mean?
And it's a move that even shitty wrestlers can hit and make and pop. Even if it doesn't look great, they can pop the crowd. Like, how many times have they, like, done it out of the blue in a Divas match? Or a Diva spears the other Diva. And even though it looks like crap, it still pops the crowd for some reason. And
why are you on one was when Edge hit Jeff Hardy when he was hanging from the thing with the in a ladder match or something.
Yeah, that's a great spear of all time. I mean, because they were fucking up there. And Jeff just took a... Man, Jeff took one hell of a bump off of that one.
Yeah. Good stuff. Next up, I don't know why this made the list. I mean, well, I do, but number 22, Iron Sheik.
Come on. Dude,
the Iron Sheik and the camel
back, dude. It humbles people, dude.
Yes. Yes, it did humble people.
He won the WWF Championship with this move.
Yes.
No, he did. It was what's his name? Arnold's going through the title, through the towel.
Yeah, but he still had the move on.
Because he took a payoff from the Ayatollah Blast, he paid him off.
Yeah. Yeah, this is.
Have
this
you
is
ever
like
actually had one of these put on you? This thing hurts.
Well, yeah.
It does.
It moves all the time, even though we weren't supposed to.
I don't understand why no one uses it in the UFC because they could fucking hurt somebody with this thing.
This move and also the figure four, if you just screw it around with your buddies and your buddy puts it on you, you're like, oh, my God, you're killing me.
Oh.
It's like, okay, no, that really hurts. Stop.
Boston Crab is the same way? It should hurt?
Yeah, sure.
Put it on right?
Yeah.
I'm surprised I'm not dead. Well, the way we did shit when I was little. We practiced all these moves.
Number 21.
You didn't even say who did it. Give the man some credit. Give Sheiky Baby some credit there, Craig.
I did say it was the
Iron Sheik. What are you talking about when he says the camel clutch?
Yeah. Anyway, number 21. This is probably the lamest move on the charts here. Number 21 is John Cena with the AA.
It does not look... tell me if when he does it the Big Show, it doesn't look freaking awesome.
Yes, it looks great, but this is a fireman's carry that they do in amateur wrestling. It's so simple.
It's John Cena, dude. It's John Cena. He's got that extra oof when he does it.
Yes.
It was his answer to the F5. He came up with the FU.
Right.
When he and Brock were feuding 10 years ago.
That's right. But,
and it does,
yeah,
it does beat everybody now, so, you know, it's a big move.
I mean, this is right up there with...
Or something.
Well, that's fine. But this is right up there with Wastelands from Wade Barrett. Come on. You pick him up.
That one, that sucks.
Unless he does it to Mark Henry. Then,
true. Then it's brutal.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't have more back problems.
So we go from one lame move to...
He's carrying this fucking company on his back, I agree. You've got to have back problems.
Number 21 was John Cena with a move. Number 20 was Scott Hall and the Razor's Edge. A very dangerous.
I always thought this looked awesome.
Oh, yeah.
You got to hear Brian pitching moves like this. His head hit the mat.
Basically, it was sort of like he was going to do a power bomb, but then he would kind of crucify the guy in crucified position and then just come down forward with it and drop the guy. Like that, and that was an awesome move, and
I was watching a little vignette from like 1989 the other day when Scott Gator Hall is coming to the NWA. He's out there on a boat. He's out there catching alligators, and they're doing this all to the 007 theme.
Right.
I remember when he jobbed to Terry Funk like 2 weeks in a row.
I think when he shaved that mustache, it was all the difference in the world. It's like he became like a good worker or something. I don't know.
Him and Henning had a good run into AWA, and that was when he really had that porn stash going. It just, when he left the AWA, he just didn't have any personality whatsoever until he became Razor. Because when he was the Diamond Stud,
yeah.
When he was a Diamond Stud, I mean, that's when he started doing the Razor's Edge, basically, but he didn't have no real care. I mean, he just didn't have any charisma until he became Razor, and that changed everything.
I don't care for this move. It's dangerous. You're not just dropping the guy down flat on his back. You're launching a guy forward where he has the tendency to land on the back of his neck and shoulders. And
for being as drunk and as druggy as he was, he did do that move a hell of a lot safer than freaking Sheamus does.
True. And you notice Sheamus is not using that anymore, so.
Because he fucked at it.
Yeah. Number 19 is the Jackhammer, and no, we're not talking about the Ryback. We're talking about Goldberg.
Now the Jackhammer was basically he'd pick you up for a suplex, then he'd kind of hold you, kind of British Bulldog style, but not as long. And then while he was dropping you, he shifted his body and basically landed on top for the pin. And actually, he did it pretty good. I mean, it really looked pretty devastating when he did. I'm actually surprised more people don't use it nowadays.
Yeah,
but,
it was always the combination of the spear and the jackhammer that was a big thing, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And talk about somebody who was spear. Goldberg did an awesome spear, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he just had to. He just got luck. I mean, everything in line for him because he just had to, you know, two awesome setup, you know, finishing maneuvers, and you know, he just had everything in line for him to get over. I mean, he's one of those guys. He's like a closer to our generation version of the Ultimate Warrior when you think about it.
Okay,
he wasn't as sloppy as Warrior, though, I don't think. Well,
better than Warrior, but I mean, everything just worked for him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like any other time, the Warrior wouldn't. It was just the perfect time. Everything worked out. It just, they made their money after not long runs, but you know, everyone's gonna remember the Ultimate Warrior. Everyone's gonna remember Goldberg.
Warriors out there crisscrossing the ropes and ducking clotheslines and aren't there, stuff like that.
Yeah. Just in case. Okay. Number 18, we got Rey Mysterio with the 619. Love this move.
Yeah, I love this. I like this move. I think the best that I ever saw him do it was, they're doing this thing between Raw and SmackDown, and I think it ended up with, they thought everybody was like in the parking lot or something. There was this big fight, and all of a sudden, Rey Mysterio was in the ring, and he had knocked Lita into the ropes, then nailed her with the 619. It's like, that is a big fucking pop. It was awesome.
It's like the variation, you know, he'll throw it like around the post or, you know, something like that. It's a good move. And not if you've seen any indie guys, you know that not everybody can pull it off. Number 17, another dangerous move.
There's a lot of luchadors that can pull it off. Cause I haven't seen it that, like, wait. I think Silver King was one of them. He had an awesome 619. And then a few other guys. But, yeah, he's the only one really doing it here that does it any good. But, yeah, I mean, it's a cool move because basically it's one of those moves that it takes a little effort to do because he's got to time himself right. He's got to grab the ropes right, you know what I mean, so he doesn't screw up.
Sometimes it's cool when, like, somebody will just see it coming and they'll just, like, catch him in a move or something like that.
Yeah, that's awesome, too, when that happens.
Number 17, we got the Road Warriors with the Doomsday Device. Scary move.
This was awesome when they started flipping people over. Like when they first hit Sting with it, and he like did a whole flip.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used to freaking kill people. I don't know how many times I saw them give this move to, like, Mike Jackson.
They broke Henry Godwin's neck doing this move.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right, they did. And that was when they'd been around for, like, a long time and were a lot safer.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, too, like, Craig, you know, you don't like guys who are, like, sloppy or not safe, but...
Yeah.
Those first few years with the Road Warriors, I mean, those guys were pretty damn, they used to just beat the shit out of people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
And like the Steiners, when they first got going with their team, they just go out there and beat the piss out of guys.
Oh, yeah.
No. I feel sorry for those job guys, like with back in the days of the Road Warriors.
Yeah, like Mike Jackson, Joe Lyth, Arn Anderson used to have to job out to them a lot.
Well, at least back then, the squash matches lasted like 10 seconds at most.
Yeah.
Okay, fellas, we got 15 minutes left in the show, and we got 15 moves left. Number 15, I don't think we need a lot of time on this one, Sergeant Slaughter's Cobra Clutch.
We missed Bruno San Martino's Bear Hug.
Oh, well, that's why.
I think this is on here just because they want him to do the Hall of Fame. So,
Craig just does not have any love for these old timers. It's just very so disrespectful.
With a bear hug,
Craig.
I mean, what
are
you gonna?
It's a bear hug.
It's a bear hug that had a guy have a 7-year title run.
A bear hug is what I greet my coworkers with in the mornings. Come on,
that's
a bear hug is a move for shitty wrestlers that can't work.
Number 14, love this move, the Swanton Bomb. By Jeff Hardy. Also,
yeah, he made it look awesome. I mean, he really had like a lot of form. But
and the farther away that the opponent is, the more of Jeff Hardy you get on top of you, I've noticed.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he's crushed many a man doing this move. Number 13, we got Eddie Guerrero. God rest his soul, with the frog splash.
Eddie had a good one, but I think I'd put actually RVD because RVD got more extension. But like I say, they both pale in comparison to the Art Bar.
Okay.
Number 12, we got we got the Macho Man with the top rope elbow. Way better than.
He was awesome.
Yeah. Way better than CM Punk's. I know.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was killing people when he was coming down on with this. And apparently he kind of was at times. But, I mean, the Macho Man, he's a lot of people remember the last few years where he was older and slowed down. But, like, the pre-WWF, early WWF, the man could jump and had springs. And he got some height on that freaking thing. I mean, that is one of the best top rope moves of all time.
I love when he started doing the spot where he grabbed the person by the hair and he just leap over the top rope and clothesline him. I thought that was awesome. So that's why his knees ended up going, you know, later in his career, doing that every night.
Yeah. It's probably why he couldn't hit the break. Anyway, number 11 was Randy Orton with the RKO. Ace
yeah, I'll go with that. Like DDP, I think it helped give him over a lot more than if he was using something else.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is, and he gets, because of his height and how lanky he is, I mean, he really makes it look good. And, you know, Couture will tell you the dumbest thing ever, but one of the most incredible moves I ever saw was when fucking Evan Bourne came off of the Shooting Star Press and came right into a fucking RKO. I mean, that was the most... That had to be the most perfect move pulled off on live TV ever.
That was like one in a million shot to like pull that off, it seemed like.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was during the run-in, and I thought it'd come off better and be better remembered if it was a match. That's what didn't like it.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think Evan's worthy of a pay-per-view match to do that, but, you know, that was just beautiful.
We already talked about another variation of this with Sting, but number 10 is Bret the Hitman Hart's sharpshooter.
Bray used to sit down with it, though. He made it look, he really made it look like it hurt, and it did. I mean, if you really put it on somebody, he did. But he, that was one thing Bret was good about, was cinching it in and making it look real.
Yeah, and this was a time when you didn't see too many tough guys, like, doing, like, submitting
yes.
the submission moves back then, but, you know, Bret Hardy beat Kurt Hennig and beat Ric Flair. I mean, beat a lot of people. I think he probably beat more people than Sting did with his sharpshooter, so.
I would agree. Number nine, this was actually pretty high up on the list, but Jimmy Superfly Snuka's Superfly Splash.
It probably should be a little higher, and I can tell a little funny story about this move. When I was a kid, my dad was always a drinker. So when I was a kid, when he needed a beer, he would always put his pinky out and his thumb out and, like, close the other fingers, and he'd shake his hand. And that was my
– Hang loose.
That's how I knew that my dad needed a beer. So the very first time, and I go get him a beer. So the very first time I saw – and it's stuck up, like, climbing to the top rope, and he gets ready to do the Superfly Splash, but he sticks his pinky and his thumb out, and he kind of, like, up on the top rope, and I'm like, Dad, Superfly needs a beer.
Two of them.
And, that was the first, I'll never forget that, because that was the first time I ever saw him do the Superfly Splash, which was, incredible, and it was incredible when he did it off the cage. And to me, it's even the one that's more incredible is the one where he missed, even though everyone remembers the other one a little better.
The number eight position is held by the Nature Boy Ric Flair in the figure four leg lock. Love this move.
I think this is probably the most done submission finisher of all time.
Yeah.
It's got to be the most famous one.
Yeah, the most famous one, I mean.
Unless you're Hulk Hogan, he can't put it on right. Grab the wrong leg, turn the wrong way, spin around backwards. Oh, wait. Yeah.
But when Rick would grab that leg and start trying to put it on, he'd get some heat.
My favorite one is when he grabbed the leg and then he would do a little dance, you know, take the leg, move side to side, do a little strut, give him a woo. And then slap it on.
He just sitting there hanging on those ropes, getting that extra leverage.
Yeah, I always loved it too when, like, Ricky Martin would put Ric Flair into it, and Rick would sell it like he was being killed.
Or I would love it when Rick would have it on, and the person would just roll over, and within that split instant, Ric Flair would scream like a bitch.
Reverse the pressure.
Yeah. Another move that. Well, the move itself, not so great, but the person doing it and the rewards that he reaped from it, Hulk Hogan's leg drop of doom is number seven.
Yeah, he's beating just about everybody with it. 1, 2, 3, right in the middle of the ring. That's one thing I say for Hulk Hogan is, like, during the 80s when he was the champion, I mean, they had he beat everybody right in the middle of the ring with no bullshit.
And the thing was, Hogan was so big and had such big legs that you can actually buy it. I mean, maybe not now when he's older, but back then you could actually buy it because he did it. He made it look good. I mean, you know, people remember the last time they seen it, but during the 80s, I mean, he did it good, and it was also the combination with the big boot. I mean, and he had one hell of a big boot.
I always liked Bret Hart's leg drop. I thought he threw the best leg drop that there was.
Real short one, real quick and snap, like the.
Then one, two, three kid would throw a dozen of them in a row or something.
I liked the
Bobby Eaton had an awesome one off the top rope.
Yeah, that's
true.
What I was gonna say, Bobby Eaton, like when they did like the Vegematic, the Midnight Express.
Yeah.
You know, where he held him in the bear hug and leaned his head down and he came off with a leg drop and looked like a murderer.
Good stuff. Number six should be number one. Shawn Michaels' Sweet Chin Music.
That's probably my favorite finisher of all time. Just because, you know, he's kicking him dead in the face. You can buy it knocking anybody out. You can hit anybody with it.
Yeah.
I know.
Just like the swindling hips.
And unlike Lance Storm,
Whenever Sean hit the super kick, you never noticed him slapping his thigh to make it sound louder.
I was just going to say.
I swear to God,
like
every time when I used to throw it, the first thing I for some reason, I could key on his hand slapping his thigh. And I never, ever seen Sean do it, even though I know he does. But I'll tell you what, Shawn Michaels is great, and as awesome as Shawn Michaels is, if they did not make the switch to the Sweet Tune Music from the fucking high German suplex, he would not be is the Hall of Famer that he is.
Agreed.
This move added so much to Shawn Michaels, it's unreal.
Yeah, it's just an easy move. It's like that ankle lock. It's just a move you can hit anybody with or, you know, put on anybody at any time, pretty much.
But I will say that Chris Adams' super kick was better than Shawn Michaels.
No,
nothing wrong with Chris Adams.
Chris Adams.
Nothing wrong with Chris
Adams. Chris Adams beat women, so Shawn Michaels is the better one.
I'll never forget the one time when he turned on Kevin. That was the most stiffest super kick I have ever seen in my life.
He's dead now.
At number five, we have Jake Roberts and his DDT. I love this move, and I love Jake Roberts. He just looked so believable in everything he did.
Yeah, it's one of those
everything he did back then built up to the DDT. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So when he had everyone trained that when he put it on and he hit it, I mean, people knew that it was over.
Yeah, I mean, it's like today you hear this first time I heard any fans like chanting for a move. You know, DDT, DDT, kind of like they do RKO now for Randy Orton. So.
Yeah. At number four,
we're obviously going to not finish before we're off the air. So everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. Like you could hear me make shit my bitch on angrymarks.com the Angry Marks show from last night. So everyone check out angrymarks.com, and we're probably going to get to the very last couple after the live feed, but so everyone check out the download, and you can hear the show and hear everything.
Yes, and I also have a Brent Kremen sighting from Super China Buffet Day
that
I will talk about as well, and I'll talk about not seeing Akira Okuto in toilet. Anyway, number four is The Rock, and they have two of his moves here. They have the Rock Bottom and the People's Elbow. Rock Bottom is a fine move. The People's Elbow is ridiculous, but everybody popped for it.
Okay, the Rock Bottom is basically, what's the real name of it? The
Uranagi.
Uranagi, that's right, the Uranagi. But basically, it's basically a Japanese move is where it really originated from. But yeah, the rock Bottom looks awesome, but the People's Elbow, for as absurd as it is, when he was the most, when he first came out and he was the most hated guy, and everyone hated him and put the shit out of him, it was the People's Elbow that slowly started to get him over, because that's the first people would actually cheer him when he would start doing the People's Elbow, like the ladder match with Hunter. They booed the shit out of him that whole match, but when he set up for the People's Elbow, they were going crazy for him, and then, of course, they turned on him after the People's Elbow. Or there was also a cage match with him and Mankind and Shamrock where he was hated, but he did double People's Elbow, and everyone went crazy for it. So it's like, it's one of those moves like Mr. Socko or the Worm. Sometimes the most absurd, stupidest thing can get the most over with the people.
Absolutely. My favorite People's Elbow is the one where he was, I don't know if he was in his dress shoes or his socks, but he hit the ropes and then, like, quit running and, like, slid the extra, like, last 3 feet.
I think he was, like a referee little, or something like that.
Yeah. He was, like, on the, it was like a little kid on the hardwood floors, you know, he just slid, you know, and then dropped the elbow. It was phenomenal.
Like when you go to church and slide up and down those floors in, like, the foyers of the church or something like that.
Sure, yeah, I do that. I'll do that Sunday. Anyway, number three, Triple H and the Pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, he's baiting everybody with it, pretty much.
He almost killed Kurt Angle that one time when the table gave out and gave Kurt a real concussion.
Oh, that was brutal.
I heard the table went into business for itself.
yeah, the pedigree is pretty. It is a pretty awesome move. I mean, it really does look devastating, and it'd be funny if CM Punk ever tried to do the Pepsi plunge in the WWE.
I always noticed too when Triple H is doing this move, if he likes you, he'll let go of your arms. If you're a job guy or he doesn't like you, he'll keep your arms locked behind your back. It's tremendous, especially earlier in his career. At number two, we have The Undertaker with the Tombstone Piledriver.
Yep. The Deadly Martinet, which is the most deadliest move in all of Mexico. You don't just get pinned if you take a tombstone. You get carried
right
out of the ring, and you don't come back for months.
That's right.
Yeah.
So many friendships
in Mexico have been lost because the they always have seconds for the big matches where the guy would go, like, it ruined the friendship between Art Barr and Perro Aguayo because Art Barr just had to give the martinet to the Blue Panther, and a Perro Aguayo had to beg and plead with him not to do it, which ended up causing the distraction for Art Barr to lose and ended their friendship.
It's a fine move, and I don't think there's any other man that does it better than The Undertaker. So,
yeah.
Do you remember the story about Hulk Hogan,
like, tricking? He tricked the Ultimate. He tricked the Undertaker into thinking that he actually hurt him with the tombstone when he didn't even get close to hitting the ground. But he sold it like he was hurt, and Undertaker actually felt bad for like years because of it.
Yeah, it was when like he lost the title and like there's a chair in the ring and he's supposed to power drive him on the chair and his head came nowhere near the chair or something like that.
Yeah.
He got carried out of the ring.
Yeah. And I don't actually even understand why. I mean, in a way it kind of works that it's one of those banned moves because when they do hit it, it means even more, but to me, I've never seen The Undertaker or Kane do that move and make it look anywhere unsafe at all.
Yeah.
I can understand the Owen pile driver that he gave Stone Cold because if you have a big head or something or a long neck, you're going to get hurt, but I've never seen Undertaker or Kane do that move anywhere close to where they could even come close to hurting the person. I mean, he gave Pete Rose a devastating one where he was near 6 inches from the ground.
I bet you the one he made sure to be the safest on was when he gave it to Linda McMahon on the stage.
That would have been funny if that would have been the first one he fucked up and fucking drilled.
And last but certainly not least.
It's number two.
Who could have saw this coming? At number one, we have Stone Cold Steve Austin and the Stunner.
Yeah.
Stone Cold, you know, maybe not as long as run as Hogan or whatever, Flair, but Austin is the biggest draw, and that was his big move. And when he hit the Stunner, everybody fucking went crazy for it. And my favorite one's the one he gave to Santino. Where Santino just
was
high in the air as he could and gave the salute.
Yep.
That's where he got that salute, the like headbutt from when he did. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I like the one where he gave to Booker T just a couple years ago, where Booker T was drinking a beer and Stone Cold hit him with the Stunner, and the beer went flying, and Booker T spat the beer, you know, as he was falling and taking a bump.
When he nailed Donald Trump with it, like it looked bad, and his Trump comb over kind of got all fucked up.
Well, it kind of is all the time, but yeah.
Remember when he did it to Linda, and that looked horrible too.
Oh, gosh.
I think Linda took it better than Vince does. Vince always fucks it up. Vince always wants to take this giant crazy bump, but he always fucks it up.
Yeah,
I remember that first one he took. He was like gyrating, like he just like went into spasms on the mat. It looks like he's dead.
Like Devon, the way he sells.
Yeah.
Shaking the legs and, yeah. Yeah, so number one is Stone Cold Steve Austin. But
No, the real number one is the Von Erich Iron Claw, the most devastating move in all pro wrestling, because they have this super Von Erich tendon strength that caused their hand to be stronger than the normal man, and they had the technique to put it on that even Mike Von Erich or Chris Von Erich could submit a main event fucking wrestler with it, dude. It was devastating, dude.
Ed, can I tell you something real quick? When you went to deal with those dogs, we talked about it for like 2 minutes and gave our opinion. So you just say what you're going to say about number 46 on the countdown, and then we'll finish up.
Yeah. You guys suck. That's what I can say.
Yeah. Your mom
but anyway, out. It was awful. I'll never forget for Fritz Von Erich had the double claw on Michael Hayes and Buddy Roberts. And they were both telling them like it was the most devastating thing ever. Huh?
Why would you just not remove your head from their hand? It can't be that hard.
Because of
on
the
toes
in their hand, dude. Come on now. They had that thing, their fingers were dug into your skull, dude, and it was crushing them. And I'll never forget, though, the first time, because we talked about it a little bit the other last week, was when Kamala used to be Kamala. Everyone thinks Kamala is a joke now because of all the comedy shit, but when Kamala first came out to Memphis and to World Class, he basically, like, when he came into World Class, his first TV match was against Jose Lothario, who at this point was old, but he was still Jose Lothario, and he came in and squashed him. And then he squashed all the jobbers, I mean, and then some of the, like, Johnny Manziel's guys a little higher, he just destroyed them. Never got touched. I mean, no one even came close to hurting him. And then he wrestled David Von Erich, and he's kicking David Von Erich's ass, and then David just gets the claw on him. And then all of a sudden, for the first time ever, you see Kamala just freaking out and just, like, in pain. And then he's, like, just terrified of the move. I mean, that was an awesome storyline when they did that, because I was, like, at the time, I could say Kamala was, like, the biggest, baddest dude out there. And then there was a move that could just, even he was scared of. But,
you remember,
I don't know,
when
I mean,
Kerry Bulba put Mate Pin Carry 1-2-3 in the ring with the Iron Claw?
The what?
When Taurus Bulba pinned Kerry with the Iron Claw.
That pissed me off so much, goddammit, I almost fucking threw my remote control through the TV.
Well, at least that was after the heyday of World Class, so, you know, it was okay.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But Fritz actually, out of all of them, if you look at old footage of Fritz actually looked like he was killing people with that thing.
Barry Windham was better.
No, whatever. Baron Von Roski's claw is better than Barry Windham's.
Okay, so you're now you're just being stupid.
instigator, I love it.
But anyway, the Von Erich Iron Claw, the greatest finisher in all of pro wrestling all time, all my life. I don't know what the hell y'all say.
Yeah, that's fine. So anyway.
So last now, did you say you ran into Akira Hokuto at Super Chat Buffet Day?
No, I did not. I looked all over for it. I could not find
it. We did that joke a couple of weeks ago. We're past that now. Continue, Craig.
Yeah. Anyway.
Did Whitney ask you about Akira Hokuto?
No, but Justin did.
Oh, I was trying to get Whitney to do it.
Well, Whitney probably had no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Or, anyway, and you probably spelled it wrong, let's be honest. Anyway. So Super China Buffet Day was, of course, this last weekend, and we had to get started really early. I don't understand why we had to get going so darned early, but
it was
anyway,
your fault.
No.
They said you demanded that y'all go to the buffet at Tulalip and had to go all this way out of the way.
Trust me, I don't demand anything, and if I do demand something, Brian would do the complete opposite. You know,
well, I remember when you missed that China Buffet Day last year when you're like, oh, we're going to cheat the casino, we're going to go for the lunch right before dinner,
right,
and then we're going to get all the dinner food, and they caught on to you, Craig. They were ready for you.
Yeah. Yeah, they heard my plan.
Yeah.
Anyway, we started off at 1 o'clock, which means I needed to leave my house at 11:30 to start off for Super China Buffet Day. Get up
so
there.
Is that far from your house? Jesus Christ.
It's about an hour and 20 minutes, and we had to pick up Vince on the way, and Vince kind of dawdled, so we ended up being about 10 minutes late.
Well,
anyway, long story short.
he's only like 5 minutes from your house, but yeah, he is kind of slow.
Yes. Well, he's on Vince time.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we get up there, and everybody's real cool. Tofino came down from Vancouver area. I think he was in Surrey, but anyway, he came down, loved that dude, and brought his wife, and Justin was there for a bit, and just had a nice meal, and Dash Venture showed up with his girlfriend, Layla. Not even sure if that's how you pronounce her name. Anyway, had a nice meal. No sign of Brett Kremen. So, meet Andy. By the way, Ed, you and Andy would have got along great. Andy's a bodybuilder. He's a hard-working guy, and I walked into his house later on after Cold Stone, found a 3-foot bong sitting on his table. I was like, huh, good for him. Anyway, I probably just dimed him out. Anyway, had the nice buffet, got a good picture with everybody, sat at the end of the table next to Granny and Whitney and Brian. So had a nice time at the buffet. Ended up in Fremont going to Cold Stone, and as I was walking towards Cold Stone, there was a man shuffling down the sidewalk in front of me. I tried to pass him, but when I went to the right, he went to the right, and when I went to the left, he went to the left, and then he stopped to look at something, and I almost ran into the back of him, and I was getting perturbed, and I was going to make my way around him, and then he stopped again and turned a little bit, and doggone it if it wasn't Brent Kremen. And so I texted Brian and Vince. I said, Brent made it. And
how did you not know it was Brent?
I just didn't notice him from the back. He was, and number one, it was about 80 degrees out, and he's wearing a jacket. So, anyway. We get in there, and Brent introduces me to this girl. I can't for the life of me remember her name, and as Brian called her, we'll just call her Sue. She was a nice lady. I don't know what else to say about her. She was round, and she was cordial. And that's all I'll say about her. But
did you say a big word?
She was a little wacky, just like Brent. I mean, it made sense. And Brent apologized profusely for missing the buffet because the buses don't run to Tulalip on Sundays, he explained. And
have a Kuto get home if they don't run the buses on Sunday.
I have no idea. Plane, I guess. Anyway, Brent and his friend got the biggest ice cream that they were allowed.
The cheese, what do you expect?
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but I'm glad you did. And so we sat around, and Dash kind of eyed him and said, "Is that Brent?" And yeah, that's Brent. And, you know, he was fine. And we got done with Cold Stone. We were there for about 15 minutes, and Brent goes, "Now, if I could just find a ride to the guy's house to watch the pig," and I was like, "Brent, just come on. You're going to take me, Craig?" "Yes, I'm going to take you. Vince is going to ride with Jim." And anyway, we figured it all out. So I stuffed Brent in the car, and I told him, as soon as we got in the car, I said, "Brent, Benny's riding home with us. So there is no room." And he goes, "Well, I guess I'll strap myself to the top." "No, Brent, there is no room on the way home." "Okay, I understand." We get to Andy's house, and he goes and grabs a beer. It was either a cocktail or a beer, and he was giggling because it was free. And he made sure to place himself, the couch was completely empty. He made sure to place himself right dead in the center of the couch, so two people had to be uncomfortable around him. So the pay-per-view started. He watched the first match, and by the time Jericho was pinning Dolph Ziggler, I looked over and Brent was completely asleep. I mean, out.
Doesn't he fall asleep at like all the pay-per-view shows or something?
I told Vince, I said, he must be on his medication. Because he would wake up inadvertently. He would use the restroom. One time he woke up, and to get out of the maze of chairs would have been real easy for him to take a left, but he like took the long way around and was like knocking people over and running the gauntlet where the other way would have been a lot quicker. Anyway, so he was so well behaved, and the girl did not come with, so it was just him. And Andy had to sit by him. And at one point, Brent was inches from having his head on Andy's shoulder because he was sleeping so hard. I don't think he watched but maybe two matches out of the whole thing. So, anyway,
well, there wasn't much was, to be honest.
Well, it was an okay show, but
nothing bad. But
anyway, kind of... Brent was the most well-behaved I've ever seen him, and I stepped up and made sure he got to the pay-per-view, so anybody gives me any crap about being mean to Brent, you can suck it. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. So,
I watched SummerSlam with Craig.
What's that?
Guess who I watched SummerSlam with?
Matt?
Matt? Clary? No, he didn't. He did not make the draft from Houston, even though I probably wish he would have. But I had to watch SummerSlam with everyone's favorite Supersonic.
Oh, really? How's old Supersonic?
Yeah, I'd actually like I was gonna go to Raw when they were here, and he had actually he had told me he's like, he had asked me if I was going. I go, well, I'm not getting any freebies. And he's like, well, I'll grab the tickets and we'll go. So he had actually grabbed me a ticket, but I actually had some car issues, so I wasn't able to go. So I kind of felt bad. So I was like, well, hey, man, I'm not sure what I'm doing for Super China Buffet Day, but I am going to get the pay-per-view, you know, just to be nice. And then he texted me back. He's like, oh, it's my friend's birthday that day, and then I think we're going to watch that Buffalo Wild Wings. So I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Nice.
You know, I'm peace and quiet while I watch SummerSlam. So right before SummerSlam starts, I get a text, hey, none of the Buffalo Wild Wings are showing it. Are you still watching it? And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem, come over. And then he texts me back, and he's like, are you streaming it? Or are you going to buy it? And I was like, well, I'm actually going to buy it. And then I get a text saying, okay, great, I'm bringing my TV.
What?
You bringing your TV?
I have a nice size TV, dude, but it's not a flat screen.
Okay.
It's like one of the last ones before like high definition or flat screens took off. I mean, it's got a nice picture. It's just not a flat screen. So
he
comes
to
the door
TV.
Holding his. It wasn't like a super giant big TV, but I mean, it was it was a nice TV. But he comes to the door with his TV.
Damn. More dedicated than I'd be. I just watch it on your regular TV.
Exactly.
And the picture was nice. I was watching it like on the first one. I was like, damn, man, did they make fucking these fat TVs high definition? Because, I mean, it looked nice, but he was all, I guess he's one of those high definition kind of snobs. So he's like,
Well.
And, you know, he's a little dude, so he's like, the TV was as big as him.
Right.
So we watched the show, and he was actually less annoying than normal. He's actually realizing, Craig, that he's annoying. And
I'm glad.
He actually admitted, he goes, he told me, I now understand why Terry wanted to kick my ass. So he's still got a long way to go, but he's actually self-aware of that. And he said he will apologize to Vinny's girlfriend the next time he sees her.
What did he do to Vinny's girlfriend?
We were at WrestleMania, and we were all in the same row.
Yeah.
And he came. I was actually on the end, but he came through the row, and he came up to Vinny's girlfriend, and he says, "You're in my seat." And before she could respond, his ticket was right in her face.
Yeah.
So Vinny kind of okay. grabbed the ticket, and he's like, dude, you're the row behind us. So then he just didn't go back down the row. He just kind of, like, jumped between her and Whitney to his seat.
Yeah.
I have to remember that a lot of these dudes that we, you know, go to these events with are younger and maybe a little socially awkward because they're wrestling fans.
Don't get those fans.
Well, I've learned to be patient WrestleMania weekend, not to mention I'm usually going with Brian. Mm-hmm. So, but that's another kind of patient. But yeah, it's wacky wrestling fans are wacky wrestling fans, and it doesn't matter how old they are, it doesn't matter what their upbringing, they're wrestling fans, so they're probably broken in some way, shape, or form.
Oh yeah, wrestling fans, we're all fucked up.
I prefer us than the casual wrestling fans because, my God, I just hate going to wrestling shows because it just makes me shake my head at the stupidity of the of this. I told the story before, I went to a SmackDown house show on Friday, and the dude next to me is on his cell phone. Can you see me? Can you see me? I'm waving. Right. I'm waving. I'm in the corner. Can you see me? And I'm like, dude, there's no camera.
Oh man.
it's like no matter what, you're always going to end up sitting next to that guy, you know?
That guy or the other guy who thinks who thinks his name is Mark and he's smart.
Yeah, they're worse than the stupid ones.
Yeah.
I take the stupid ones over the smart ones.
I can get a kick out of the stupid ones. Because the marks that are smart is like, God, what the fuck are you reading? You're not even smart enough to read the actual Wrestling Observer. You're reading the copy and paste website that changed it like 5 times.
Did you know that like the British Bulldogs actually had a bulldog breeding site when they were younger, and that's why they got their name, the British Bulldogs? No, that's what I heard. I heard that.
I know. I've heard some stuff very similar to that.
Anyway,
the worst ones ever, well, I don't know if they were the worst ones or the greatest, was these hillbillies that sat behind us at the Survivor Series with Brett and Owen and Beckham. And when Jerry Lawler came out, these fools started screaming, "Get him, Jerry! Get him, Jerry!" And then the whole time they're like, "That's talking to him. That's talking to him. He hears us. He knows what we're saying." And it's like, shut up, dude.
Last thing, and then I'm done for the evening. They have a house show coming to Everett, which is pretty close to Tulalip, actually. But it'll be about an hour and a half drive. But my son came in the door. Apparently, him and Mama had been driving home, and the radio was on. And he came in and was stumbling over his words. John Cena and the Big Show was a cage match. They're going to come in Seattle. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I know. And I settle down, son. He's 6. He loves John Cena. And so I open up my laptop and I said, I'll check when tickets go on sale. I don't know how, I don't know why this happened, but I got a pre-sale thing from Comcast Arena in Everett, and it says you can buy your tickets right now. And so I hit up their site, and I put best available in the cart, and put in 3, because I'm not going with Brian anymore. He can get his free tickets, and I'm tired of waiting for him. But anyway, that's another story. Came up 2nd row. I was like, hey, wow, look at this, buddy. 2nd row, and he was just, oh, that's awesome, Dad. What I didn't look at is the price, $97 a piece.
Damn.
You got to fly, because all the times that I would have, like, because I used to always get, you know, either 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, and it cost me $250 a piece because I'd always have to go to a scalper.
Anyway, $97 a piece, and 2nd row, and I'm like, wow, pal, that's really expensive. We're talking like $350 for us as a family to go.
That's before we drive the hour and a half down the road. And he's like, well, I don't know, buddy. Those are pretty expensive. And my son goes, it's okay, Daddy. I understand. And I looked at him, and I was so proud of him. They said bye. So we're sitting in the second row. So.
He's a better guilt tripper than Granny.
Yeah, and well, he was good about it. If he would have stuck out his, you know, bottom lip and pouted, then I probably would have let him go and gotten something in the $50 range or $75 range. But anyway, so yeah, we'll see John Cena and
you
show
should
in the match.
You know that new that kids show starts tomorrow morning. The new WWE show.
Oh, okay. What's that on?
It's on like the CW or something.
Oh, okay.
Has that somewhere.
What's it called?
It's Saturday Morning Slam. Starts tomorrow morning.
Saturday Morning Slam. All right, I'll be for
it. If I'd like to watch, so. And can watch
yeah.
it. Either, so.
Okay, well, I got a few more minutes of daylight. I'm going to go out and try to get the lawn mowed.
Cool. Well, Katrina, do you have anything you want to talk about before you go?
No, you got anything you want to talk about?
Not really. I think I have something in the back of my mind, but did you watch the Ronda Rousey fight?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well, I know Craig did because I gave him an illegal stream. But,
yes. Well, I don't have Showtime.
Yeah, me neither, but I actually thought, like you, Craig, that it was going to be a longer fight, but
yeah.
Jesus Christ, I think she's the toughest woman who ever lived. I think he's going to kick Cyborg's ass if they ever fight.
You know, I dig that chick, but I she disgusts me at the same time. I just, I don't know. Here, look at me.
Wait.
I can fight. Oh, I'm going to take off all my clothes. Hey, look, I can fight. Anyway.
I have no idea what you're complaining about.
Well, you wouldn't understand. But anyway, yeah, she's a tough broad. And an attention whore. But anyway.
You can arm bar me anytime. Well, actually, no, I'd rather do triangle.
End the show, please. But,
okay, I'll think about it. Okay, everybody come back next week. We'll have something to talk about next week. And,
yeah.
It's kind of been a while since we had like a guest. Maybe we can get a guest or something.
Yeah. I will get on that this week. I will double my efforts, which means I will send two emails.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky. Everybody come back next week, and we will talk to everyone then.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You want to find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook 'em up!